Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is African-American composer Adolphus Hale Stork. Hale Stork has been writing music consistently since the mid-1960s, but it's only been in the past 20 years that he's come to national prominent attention for his music steeped in American musical populism. He's written numerous works for orchestra, including four symphonies, three operas, numerous chamber works, and 12 works for chorus and orchestra, a specialty of the composer. Hale Stork studied with Nadia Boulanger, David Diamond, and Vittorio Giannini. In recent years, his music has been recorded on the Albany and Naxos labels, among others, and his work has been championed by conductor Joanne Folletta, who's recorded a number of his compositions. He's currently a professor of music and composer in residence at Old Dominion University. The Tulsa Symphony performed his two romances for viola and chamber orchestra for a special broadcast-only concert, which is coming up Saturday evening at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 4 on our sister station, Classical 88.7 KWTU. He joins me to talk about his work and his music today on Studio Tulsa. Adolphus Hale Stork, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What's interesting about your music? I mean, there's many things that are interesting, but it seems like every time that you have a place or a thematic element in place, your music is really shaped by that musical thought or whatever thought goes into the piece. I'm thinking of something like American Port of Call, which was you based it on the port city of Norfolk, near where you live. Every piece seems to have its own character. Is that something you set out to do in every single piece, is find that particular piece's character?
I'm attracted to music as theater or music as storytelling, and that idea influences my writing.
Music as theater. Now, you know, as you well know, there is a genre of music that is absolutely perfectly suited for that, and that is film. Now, it's not necessarily your story. You're illustrating someone else's story. Has that ever had an interest for you?
Not really, because I think I'm too hard-headed. Then the music is written to the dictates of who's ever directing or, you know, the producers and all of that. And I'm kind of an independent spirit.
Well, tell me a little bit about how classical music and art music became a part of your life. Was it something that was ingrained in you from an early age? Were you part of the church? What was it that sent you on your path towards composing music as your life work?
Yeah, well, all of the above. I started out in the public school system taking violin lessons, then eventually and singing in the choirs. Then I got in a all men and boys choir, high church Anglican tradition in Albany. And was in that for several years. That probably was the most influential experience. I also played in the high school orchestra, and started in high school. I decided I wanted to try composing, and that was it. I mean, it just locked right in as the thing I really wanted to do. And I had a wonderful high school orchestra teacher, a woman named Gertrude Howard. She said, you know, Adolphus, if you write it, we're going to play it. And I wrote it, and she did see that it got played. And I even conducted a couple of pieces. And that was the beginning. It was a wonderful gift from a gifted high school teacher. I could spend hours at the piano making up music before I'd play my first scale or arpeggio that I was supposed to practice. And I knew I preferred to just make up stuff than to be performing athlete. I just like to make music.
Now, when you went to school to become a composer, it was the early 60s, and this was a time when I think I've read an interview where it's like, okay, you got to put your elbows on the keyboard. And you know, it was a time when, that's your words, not mine.
I know.
And you said it was a time when it was, tonality was out of fashion.
That's true. But I came up, now, I was very, very fortunate to have come up primarily as a singer, singing in choirs, even sang some solos and things like that. And that, of course, is a very tonal art. And I that has always been the major influence that that a lot of composers of my generation, I believe, were piano players. They started out at the piano and never looked back, and they never had a choral participation where you have to blend with somebody, or you have to, the chords have to be right, and it's mostly triadic music, and it's mostly tonal music. And so that's what influenced me. And I think maybe most of my music is really just expanded choral music, or just made for orchestra or piano or something like that. So that's not unusual, since the classical art in the Western world basically started with choral singing. I mean, and with people singing in choirs, whether it's Gregorian chant or whatever, it's, that was what it was all about. So the vocal tradition greatly has influenced my writing.
Now, you also had teachers that also were, again, perhaps also out of fashion as well. I mean, they wrote wonderful music, but I'm thinking Vittorio Giannini, H. Owen Reed, David Diamond. Again, these were people that didn't follow the sort of mainstream of music. They found their own path.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out. They were of a generation themselves where their careers were established before the 12-tone school kind of swept the world, and experimentalism became the in thing. So they had already had established careers, and they weren't so easily swayed by can you count to 12 or put your elbows on the table. And since I was a choral person, fundamentally, that worked out best for me. Rather than going to Juilliard, I went to the Manhattan School of Music. And Juilliard people, I think, sneered at the Manhattan School of Music, or at least the critics in New York, as being the museum of music rather than the school of music. And the Juilliard people are more of cutting edge, and which isn't necessarily good. So I lucked out in that way. I've been a conservative during my whole life, and I've written many pieces and commissioned and write many pieces for chorus and orchestra, because, as I said, a lot of the folks of my generation who spent their time at the piano or using the piano as their major influence in terms of their musical ideas aren't really that skillful in writing for a choir or for the human voice. And that is something I have been blessed to have as a background.
And choral music has been a part of your life and part of your output, even though you're a really a wonderful orchestral writer. And that comes to view in so many of your works, but the ones that the Tulsa Symphony is going to play, the two romances for viola and chamber orchestra. This was written, I believe, was it in the mid to late 1990s, 1997. What do you remember about what you were thinking about when you wrote the two romances?
Fortunately, I wasn't thinking about anything. If I'd been thinking, I may never have written them. I was feeling a lot, nothing in particular in terms of a person, but I had this approach to writing it in those days, especially with those two pieces, which I thought, were quite lovely. And if I was going to be true to myself, then that's what I would have written. It's kind of what I was thinking. As it turned out, they sat in a box for 20 years after I wrote them, because I thought they would be sneered at by music critics as too pretty and having too much emotion, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly the things you weren't supposed to do when I was a student. So I went through a period of where I was quite intimidated from the idea of being myself, because you're supposed to be, quote unquote, modern, and they weren't modern enough. But as it turned out, Beverly Baker came along, and I showed them to her. She loved them. She showed them to Joanna also.
And, this is Joanne Folletta.
It turns out that they're now, at least in the chamber version, among the most popular things I ever wrote. I wasn't going for popularity. I was just trying to go for truthfulness.
what I find interesting is you said you set them aside. Were they originally for viola and chamber orchestra, or were they originally for viola and piano, and you scored them for a chamber orchestra?
They're originally for viola and chamber orchestra. That's how I conceived of them. Eventually, for a recording, I made a chamber version of them, where it was a string quartet, flute, and harp. And that's the one that's been heard the most. It's only been played once in an orchestra version, as far as I know. And so the one in Tulsa thrills my heart, and I'm looking forward to that happening.
Here is an excerpt from Adolphus Hale Stork's Two Romances for Viola and Chamber Orchestra, as played by the Tulsa Symphony, which will be heard this Saturday evening at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 4 on our sister station, Classical 88.7 KWTU. My guest today is Adolphus Hale Stork, a noted American composer. He's composer in residence at Old Dominion University and composer of numerous pieces, including a piece that will be played by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in their broadcast concert, The Two Romances for Viola and Chamber Orchestra. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I want to talk about one of the early pieces that gave you, I think it was kind of a break for you. Thor Johnson, the conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony for many years, sort of one of the pioneer American conductors, commissioned you to write a piece for the Bicentennial. It's called Celebration. Can you tell us about the circumstances of that and how that all came about?
Well, Thor Johnson heard about me from his brother-in-law, who was a choral conductor at Wayne State, in Detroit. And wanted me to write a piece to conclude a choral concert that was going to take place at a major church in downtown Detroit. And I wrote a piece, and he told Thor Johnson about it. And here's the deal. Thor had been approached by the JCPenney Company. And it turns out that the chairman of the board of the JCPenney Company wanted to commission 3 boxes of music to be distributed to every high school in the country, one for choir, one for band, one for orchestra. And each person in charge of those different boxes was allowed to give out 1 commission. And since Thor had heard about me through his brother-in-law, he asked me if I would like to have the orchestra commission. And I said, oh, yes, of course. And this is back in the 74, somewhere around there. And we're getting ready for the Bicentennial. I said, okay, fine. And I wrote this little piece, 3.5 minutes long, Celebration. He said it could only be 3.5 minutes long because we had to fit on a LP with other pieces as a demonstration. I said, that's fine. And it's supposed to be for high school orchestra, which has turned out to be the last of the whole story. Because it's interesting, during our years studying at high levels, master's degree and all of that, no one ever talks to you about, at least they didn't to me in those days, how to write for a high school orchestra, the practicalities and the problems. And so I wrote this dashing little piece called Celebration, and lo and behold, it took off with professional orchestras. And it made me really happy that it did, because that's all I had ever thought I'd be writing for. And it was a nice start to my career because it did start getting played all over the place. Took my name around with it, and the rest is history, say. Except that now that little piece has become history. It's almost never done, and I'm sorry about that. Because, frankly, I think it might be a little too tough for a 3.5-minute piece for an orchestra who only has a short limited amount of time to whip up a concert. So Celebration is still the beginning step for my career, and I was very happy about that.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that first step by Adolphus Hale Stork. Here's music from his work, Celebration. My guest today is Adolphus Hale Stork. He's a noted American composer. The Tulsa Symphony is performing his two romances for viola and chamber orchestra in their upcoming broadcast concert, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, what's interesting about, you've been writing the whole time, and then all of a sudden, you said you felt like you were conservative and out of step, and you basically put music away because you didn't want critics talking about it. And then all of a sudden, the music world caught up to you.
Well, it's a major lesson in the pendulum swinging, because when I was coming along, you had to be writing clusters and 12 tone. I mean, I'm thinking about Penderecki. I'm thinking about Boulez, Elliot Carter. I mean, this stuff is excruciatingly difficult, and they had no use for a lyrical guy who stayed in a key and wrote his rhythms and patterns and things like that. And it was intimidating, as I think I mentioned, for a long time. I said, I don't know how I fit in today's music world, but I was not going to write music I hated just so I could be approved of by critics I never met and didn't care about. Fortunately, in a way, Terry Riley came along with NC, and other composers started balking against the rules of atonalism and all of that. And then eventually the pundits started thinking that, and so did composers, that saw that it was really a dead end with the audiences. There was a lot of arguing going back and forth between, classical music. We're going to kill it. Or can we save it in some way? And that's when the musical guru woke up and said, wait a minute, folks, there's room for a lot under the tent. And that's when they started opening their eyes and saying, are there some pieces that are more approachable? I've always been called approachable. And, I didn't mind that. Approachable, but not, quote-unquote, an important composer as the thing. And then I had to do a lot of self-gazing. Do I want to be important, or do I want to just be happy? And I think I decided on happiness. And also, when they came up with all these isms as I was talking about, I decided to invent my own ism, which I called authenticism. And that means being true to who I am in terms of the materials that went into music. As I would teach my students, it's a case of the muscles, visceral reaction. There's a case of the mind, the intellect. There's a case of the heart. And there's a case of the ear. And you put all those together, and you've got the potential of a composer, the techniques and the skills it takes to be a composer. And I said, being true to all of those, what would I write? And that's where I went.
Over the last few years, your music is being played significantly. It's being recorded significantly. We can hear a lot of this music that you wrote 20, 30 years ago that has just been finally resurrected and performed. That must be very gratifying for you.
Yeah, it is. I told a friend of mine recently, Anonymous 3, no more, because I'm a Double Tail Circle 3rd. And I feel that, another thing I was greatly influenced by was Copeland. Copeland's attitude on the whole thing of refusing or not wanting to write in what he called a vacuum. And he stated that publicly, and that's why his populist works are still with us. And to me, that was important. I also remember a statement by Vittorio Giannini. He was one of my teachers at Manhattan School of Music. And he announced on an editorial, I think, and that I am an unabashed romantic. And that, again, that generation that at that time, it's interesting, the whipping they took. I can tell, I'm talking about Giannini, Flagello, Gaiman. They took enormous whippings from the critics because of their quote-unquote old-fashioned styles. And they were not played. They were not played in America, anyway, in any great amount. And I have recently discovered the works of Giannini and the works of Flagello, both of whom I studied with. And I said, lo and behold, this stuff is good. And they were totally put down by the critics who were only into, have you counted the 12 lately? And and all kinds of weird, how experimental have you been? I'm not against the experimentalism. I don't think there's a single thing that was discovered or experimented with in the 20th century that I haven't tried. I've written every single technique they came up with, but that's one thing. When the teachers now are starting to understand and are teaching also, and the students are demanding, that it all can be wrapped up, like Flagello said, into a stew that's available to us that we can use as we like. And I use 12-tone materials when I want to, I've used clusters, and I've used aleatoric writing. I mean, the whole nine yards is available. But at the time, oh my goodness, it was you will do or you shall perish. And Pierre Boulez saying something like, nobody's interested in any music written before 1950. And stupid stuff like that. I just did not want to write music that took place in a garret in front of 12 people. That wasn't my thing. And, of course, as a choral person, choral music takes place in front of an audience or in front of a congregation. And it definitely impacted on a lot of my thinking.
Earlier in our conversation, I mentioned that I found it interesting that you don't always write on commission. One of your newest pieces was one that you're actually on your website. It says, hey, I'm looking for somebody to premiere this piece. And it is, it sounds like it's a very powerful piece. It's titled A Knee on the Neck. It's written about George Floyd, and it features three vocal soloists, chorus, and orchestra. What made you decide to write this particular piece?
Well, my poet friend and collaborator, Dr. Herbert Martin, was based in Dayton. Within 1 week of the murder, sent me a full script for a requiem. He was so blown away, as I was also, by this incident that he sat down and scripted what he called a requiem. And I asked him, is this something you want me to set? And he said, yes, would you please? And we both needed to get this off our chest. I've taken his pretty substantial poem and made a half-hour piece out of it. And We do now have a premiere lined up, and looking forward to that. We hope it will take place in March of 22. Let's hope that the virus cooperates.
Yeah.
And so that's that piece. Did you hear about my Tulsa piece?
I have not heard about your Tulsa piece.
Oh. Well, you were the first one in Tulsa to know about it. You know about the great massacre in 1921.
Of course, yes.
The Harlem Chamber Players commissioned a piece to commemorate that. The 100th anniversary is coming up this spring, in May. And so they wanted it for a mezzo or a soprano, a voice and strings. I added a percussion and harp. And the mezzo is going to be Jhené Bridges. A very renowned metropolitan mezzo. So that is going to be premiered, we hope, sometime this summer. And it's called Tulsa, 1921.
Well, I would look forward to hearing that as well. It sounds like some important works in the stew. It's just as soon as we can gather together and make music again. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
For a composer, I imagine that is really been a difficult thing. Is, you know, you write music, you want to hear it performed, and now all of a sudden there's virtually, you know, there's very few performing opportunities.
Yeah, the as my publisher told me, the thing that's hot right now is strings with wide spaces. and I have, fortunately, if you've ever seen my catalog, it's quite sizable.
Yeah.
And includes pieces like that for string orchestra. So I have been fortunate in being able to meet, excuse the word if it bothers you, the demands of the market. And I think of all the people in music, composers have fared the least poorly because we're able to go ahead and write, even if we can't hear everything. And of course, I have a big storehouse of pieces that can be heard. So we just keep writing, and the poor performers are the ones I lament for, because they can't get a chance to perform in public and do their thing. And it's especially tough on the wind instruments and choirs.
Well, Adolphus Hailstork, I appreciate your time, and we're looking forward to hearing the piece. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
African-American composer Adolphus Hailstork speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He's a professor of music and composer in residence at Old Dominion University, and the Tulsa Symphony performed his two romances for viola and chamber orchestra with principal violist Jeff Cowan as soloist. It will be heard on a special broadcast-only concert this Saturday evening at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 4 on our sister station, Classical 88.7, KWTU. That is music from the two romances. We'll leave you with that. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher.